Most people come to Portugal for its spectacular scenery. Time-worn villages and golden beaches kissed by the Atlantic. But behind that beauty lies a hidden Portugal that few ever get to see. A place of stories so unbelievable they sound like fiction, yet every one of them is true. Explorers who ventured into the void, an empire that spanned four continents, and a dictatorship ended with flowers instead of bullets. Most tourists snap photos and move on. You're about to hear the stories that 99% of visitors never do. In this documentary, we'll walk the beaches that launched empires, the alleys where revolutions began, and the towns that shaped the fate of nations, including one place where the ocean does something no one thought possible and still holds the record to prove it. Long before Portugal redrew the map of the world, it was something else entirely, a forgotten frontier clinging to survival. The year is 1128. While France, England, and the Holy Roman Empire rise, Portugal's little more than a rugged outpost at Europe's edge. Walk through Óbidos today, and it feels like a fairy tale. Whitewashed houses, flower-draped balconies, cobbled lanes that seem untouched by time. It's one of Portugal's most photographed villages, and once you see it, you'll understand why. But these picture-perfect walls hide an incredible story. In medieval times, this wasn't a charming tourist destination. It was a fortress, bracing for siege, where these walls meant the difference between life and death. The same story plays out across Portugal. Take Monsaraz, perched dramatically on the Spanish border. Stunning views today, but built for survival, not sightseeing. And if you think these defense systems were wild, later we will see homes literally carved into boulders. You won't want to miss it. But it's here, in Guimarães, where Portugal's story truly begins. Not with a grand coronation or a peaceful succession, but with one of the most shocking family betrayals in history. June 24th, 1128. An 18-year-old rides into battle, not against a rival king, but against his own mother. Sounds like something out of Game of Thrones, but this was real, and it would birth a nation. Walking through Guimarães today, it's hard to imagine this peaceful town as the birthplace of such drama. But the reminders are everywhere. Seven towering statues now mark the exact spot where the Battle of São Mamede began. And a bronze statue of Afonso Henriques, sword in hand, stands in the town centre. Even the small, Romanesque church of São Miguel still contains the baptismal font where, according to tradition, Portugal's first king was baptized. At Alcabaça Monastery, medieval monks engineered something remarkable. They ran a river directly through their kitchen to power mills and provide fresh water for hundreds of residents. This was Portuguese ingenuity centuries ahead of its time. The monastery is now a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and visitors come to explore one of Portugal's most historically significant and architecturally stunning complexes, built over 800 years ago. But Portuguese innovation didn't stop there. High in the hills of central Portugal sits Monsanto, a village unlike anywhere else on Earth. From here, you can see for miles across the harsh, war-torn landscape that forged medieval Portugal. But here's where Monsanto becomes extraordinary. Rather than trying to move the massive granite boulders scattered across the landscape, the villagers use them as walls, floors, and even roofs. The ancient people did not hack through the rocks. Instead, the granite houses were built to accommodate the natural shapes of the boulders. You'll find homes squeezed between stones twice their size. Staircases carved directly into granite. And a house known as Casa de Uma Sotelha, the house with only one tile, where that single tile is actually a massive slab of rock, serving as the entire roof. This ingenuity, this refusal to accept the impossible, would define Portugal for centuries, but the most audacious leap was yet to come. By 1400, Portugal was ready for its greatest challenge yet. A young prince named Henry was about to attempt the impossible. This is Cape St. Vincent, Europe's southwesternmost point. And for over 1,000 years, this was where the world ended. For the citizens of Rome, Cape St. Vincent was the edge of the world, a supernatural vortex where the setting sun was dramatically submerged by the immense, unknown ocean. Now imagine standing here 600 years ago. No cars, no GPS, just you, a wooden boat, and an ocean that stretches into darkness. Every sailor you've ever known says the same thing. Beyond this point, the water boils. Sea monsters devour ships, and the earth simply ends. And yet, some brave men looked out at that horizon and thought, what if? That leap of imagination, from absolute terror to impossible hope, might be the most audacious act of human courage in history. And one man decided to turn that impossible hope into reality. From the nearby port of Lagos, Henry began launching expedition after expedition into the unknown. The voyages were made in very small ships, mostly the caravel, a light and maneuverable vessel equipped by lateen sails. But here's the thing. For 14 years, every single expedition failed. Sailors would reach Cape Bojador in Morocco and turn back, terrified by superstitions of sea monsters and the edge of the world. Today, visitors can still sail these waters on traditional wooden boats, experiencing the same coastline those first explorers saw, just with better maps and no fear of mythical beasts. In 1419, two Portuguese captains, João Gonçalves Zarco and Tristão Vaz Teixeira, were caught in a violent storm while exploring the African coast. Expecting shipwreck, they found Salvation, an island wrapped in forest and fog. They called it Madeira. What those explorers discovered remains one of Earth's most breathtaking sights. Madeira's volcanic peaks, wrapped in eternal green. Exotic flowers in impossible colours. waterfalls cascading into hidden valleys. Imagine the euphoria. You've spent your life believing the ocean ends in death. Then you find paradise floating in the Atlantic. Today, Madeira has some of the world's best hiking. The legendary Stairway to Heaven trail takes you along dramatic cliff edges with insane views. Visitors explore the levadas, those ingenious, centuries-old irrigation channels carved into mountainsides that still carry crystal-clear water across the island. And many simply come to take in the stunning scenery, volcanic beaches, emerald peaks, and endless Atlantic horizons. Every time you watch a Madeira sunset paint those volcanic peaks, you're witnessing the vindication of the most audacious leap of faith in human history. There were lands beyond the point of no return. Paradise existed past the edge of the world. Prince Henry would spend the rest of his life funding expeditions, slowly pushing Portuguese exploration further into the unknown. When he died in 1460, he was entombed at Batalha Monastery, a structure that took over 150 years to complete, its construction spanning the entire age of discovery that Henry had launched. Henry's obsession with the unknown had set the wheels in motion. Now Portugal's maritime revolution was about to accelerate beyond anyone's wildest dreams. All along Portugal's coast, fishing villages were transforming into launching pads for global exploration. Today, when you visit Cascais, once a simple fishing village, you're seeing the legacy of that transformation. This charming coastal town evolved from a sleepy fishing port into an exploration hub. Fishermen who once caught sardines suddenly found themselves building boats for expeditions to Africa. At Setúbal, you can still see the shipbuilding traditions that made Portugal's empire possible. This became the centre for constructing the caravels that would carry Portuguese flags to the furthest corners of the earth. Portugal had built the perfect exploration machine. What came next would rewrite the history of the entire world. Portuguese expeditions push further down Africa's coast, each voyage bringing new discoveries. In 1488, Bartolomeu Dias rounded the Cape of Good Hope, opening the sea route to India. From Belém Tower, Vasco da Gama departed in 1497 with a fleet that would change the world forever. 10 months later, he landed in India, the first European to reach it by sea. Today, millions visit Belém Tower to stand where Portugal's greatest maritime adventure began. The ancient cannons that once defended departing fleets now overlook tourist boats instead of treasure ships. Jeronimos Monastery, built with spice trade riches, stands as a monument to the incredible transformation of Portuguese fortunes. By 1510, King Manuel I of Portugal was pocketing 1 million cruzados yearly from the spice trade alone, equivalent to roughly $230 million annually in today's money. Today, Jeronimos Monastery is one of Portugal's most visited UNESCO World Heritage Sites, where tourists marvel at the intricate stonework that spice wealth made possible. When you stand beside the Discoveries Monument today, built right here in Belém, you're seeing tourists from around the world honour Portugal's explorers carved in stone. Every figure represents an impossible dream made real. Portugal, just 1 million people, smaller than modern-day San Diego, yet they ruled trade routes from Brazil to Japan. How is that even possible? In 100 years, Portugal went from Europe's poorest kingdom to controlling 7% of the entire world's landmass. At the beginning of the 16th century, Portugal was the most prosperous nation in the world, thanks to its feats of navigation, exploration, and conquest. But this empire came at an enormous human cost. The same ships that carried spices and gold to Lisbon also transported enslaved Africans to the Americas, while Portuguese conquest displaced indigenous communities from Brazil to India. What began as exploration became exploitation. Empires usually collapse with a bang. Portugal's fell apart like a slow-motion landslide, disaster after disaster, until the nation that once ruled the world was left clinging to survival. The collapse began with 9 minutes of terror in 1755, when a massive earthquake reduced Lisbon to rubble, killed one in every five people in the city, and sent tsunami waves across the Atlantic to the Caribbean. Portugal rebuilt its capital with the world's first earthquake-resistant buildings, the elegant grid system you see in downtown Lisbon today. But while the city rose from the ashes, the nation's confidence never recovered. The ruins of Convento do Carmo still haunt the city today, Gothic arches standing roofless and exposed like a stone skeleton, the most powerful reminder of that devastating morning. Visitors wanting to experience the full terror of that world-changing day can visit Quake, Lisbon's immersive earthquake museum in Belém. Then came the final blow. In 1822, Brazil declared independence. The vast Terreiro do Pacho, once bustling with colonial administrators managing territories from Rio to Macau, fell silent. Overnight, Portugal lost 90% of its territory, its gold mines, its sugar wealth, and the Atlantic trade routes that had sustained it for three centuries. But by the 1850s, as Portugal faced obscurity, an unexpected transformation was blooming in the mist-wrapped hills of Sintra, one that would make this forgotten kingdom Europe's most romantic destination. At Pena Palace, King Ferdinand II built a fairy tale on a mountaintop. Gothic towers, Moorish arches, and Renaissance details painted in brilliant, glowing colours. Wealthy aristocrats followed suit. At Quinta da Regaleira, a millionaire created mystical gardens with hidden grottos and spiralling wells. While at Montserrat Palace, a British merchant built an exotic villa, mixing Gothic revival with Moorish dreams. Europe had never seen anything like it. The fever spread beyond Sintra. Deep in the magical Busaco forest, the Palace Hotel became a neo-Manueline dream where European aristocrats could live inside a Portuguese fantasy. In Porto, the romantic spirit transformed an entire city. The Riverside Ribeira district bloomed with iron balconies, while the Teatro Nacional São João became a temple to the arts. São Bento Station turned travel into culture, its walls covered with 20,000 azulejo tiles, telling Portuguese history in brilliant blue and white. Part of a nationwide renaissance that saw these ceramic masterpieces evolve from simple decoration into sophisticated art. Above it all, the Dom Luís Bridge connected the city's historic heart with modern engineering, proving that romance and progress could coexist. For 60 years, Portugal had reinvented itself completely. The nation that lost its empire discovered it could capture hearts instead of territories, inspiring artists rather than conquering lands. Yet this Renaissance painted only part of Portugal's story. Beyond the romantic cities, the vast majority of the country remained untouched, poor, isolated, and increasingly aware of what they were missing. The divide between dazzling cities and forgotten countryside was growing, and in the cracks, something darker took root. The 1910 revolution didn't bring stability. It unleashed chaos, coups, crisis, political violence. By 1926, exhausted and desperate, Portugal was ready to trade freedom for order. Enter Antonio de Oliveira Salazar, a quiet, deeply devout economics professor from Coimbra. He promised discipline, Catholic virtue, and fiscal responsibility. But by 1933, he had delivered something else entirely, a one-party authoritarian regime built on censorship, repression, and fear. It would become Europe's longest-lasting dictatorship. This building looks like luxury apartments now, but for over 40 years, this was where fear lived. Portugal had more secret police per capita than Nazi Germany. Informants in every village, every workplace, every family. At Peniche Fortress, Portugal's Alcatraz, the regime's enemies disappeared into cells called segredos. Today, it's the National Museum of Resistance and Freedom. Tourists walk through the same cells where Portugal's bravest endured torture for daring to dream of liberty. Walk through Palácio de São Bento today, Portugal's Parliament building open to the public, and you're stepping onto the stage of one of history's strangest political performances. In 1968, Salazar had a stroke. His ministers were so terrified they faked cabinet meetings right here for 2 years. And Salazar? He believed every second of it. By the early 1970s, military officers and students had had enough. The regime was cracking from within. April 25th, 1974, 12:20 a.m. Two songs play on Portuguese radio, The Secret Signal. After 41 years of dictatorship, the revolution had begun. As the sun rises over Lisbon, something unprecedented unfolds. Where trams normally navigate steep medieval lanes, tanks now move through the same stone pathways. Today, when you ride tram 28 through these exact streets, you're following the route of revolution. But on April 25th, 1974, It wasn't passengers these paths carried. It was freedom. Celeste Cairo, 25, arrives at work with leftover carnations from a cancelled celebration. A soldier asks for a cigarette. She has none. So she hands him a flower. He places it in his rifle. Within hours, the image spreads. Soldiers with flowers in their gun barrels, civilians offering carnations to tanks. Lisbon blooms with revolution. Today, when you visit this market in Cais do Sodré, you're standing where a peaceful revolution literally began. As the sun sets on April 25th, history is made. Portugal pulls off the 20th century's most beautiful revolution. 48 years of dictatorship ended with flowers instead of bullets. As you explore Lisbon today, you'll discover artworks and monuments around every corner, including a marble carnation that still blooms in Eduardo VII Park, and tile murals that tell the story of democracy's triumph. Even the bridges changed. Salazar's name was torn down, replaced with 25 de Abril. This massive suspension bridge, once the fifth longest in the world, stretches 2.2 kilometers across the Tagus, its red towers rising 190 meters into the sky. Today, thousands cross it daily, many unaware it once bore the name of a dictator. Now, this engineering marvel carries the name of a revolution. From its viewing points, spectacular sunsets paint the bridge and river in gold. But as the sun set on Portugal's euphoric celebration, millions of visitors would soon arrive without knowing the incredible stories hidden in plain sight. In the early 2000s, Portugal welcomed just 4 million visitors a year. By 2023, that number would explode to over 18 million, nearly twice the country's entire population. Portugal had spent centuries exploring the world. Now the world was exploring Portugal and falling in love with what it discovered. The irony? Most of those 18 million visitors will leave without seeing the best of what this country has to offer. Drive south to Arafana Beach and you'll discover the clifftop village locals have been keeping secret for decades. While tourists flock to crowded Algarve beaches, this tiny coastal town sits beneath towering cliffs that dwarf everything below. This is where the wild Atlantic remains untouched by mass tourism. Hidden deep in Peneda Gerês National Park, Portugal's only national park, waterfalls cascade through granite gorges that most visitors never find. Cascata do Arado plunges 175 meters through ancient rock formations, while Cascata da Portela creates natural infinity pools that locals have been swimming in for generations. These aren't marked on tourist maps, but Portuguese families have been making pilgrimages here for weekend escapes since long before this country became a travel destination. In the mountains of Serra da Estrela, shepherd communities still move their flocks between stone huts on Portugal's highest peaks, making cheese by hand using techniques unchanged since Roman times. While tourists come for the observatory and hiking trails, locals continue traditions that predate Portugal itself, proving that some places choose authenticity over easy tourist money. For animal lovers, Setubal Bay offers something no resort can replicate: dolphin watching with local boat captains who know each animal personally. This isn't just wildlife viewing. You're meeting marine neighbours that fishermen have watched for decades. Portugal's ambition didn't end with sailing beyond the edge of the world. Today, this country continues to attempt the impossible, now building into the landscape itself. The Vasco da Gama Bridge doesn't just cross the Tagus, it conquers it. At 17.2 kilometres, this is Europe's longest bridge over water, over six times longer than the Golden Gate Bridge. Built to withstand an earthquake 4.5 times stronger than the one that destroyed Lisbon in 1755, it's a monument to Portuguese ambition. Speaking of earthquakes, here's something that shouldn't exist: the Águas Livres Aqueduct. Built in the 1740s to bring fresh water to Lisbon, it survived the 1755 earthquake that leveled most of the city. While palaces crumbled and churches collapsed, these 58 kilometres of stone arches stood firm. Today, you can walk along sections of this 18th century engineering feat. And honestly, can you believe it? These guys built something more earthquake-proof than most modern buildings, using nothing but rocks and pure stubbornness. In the plains of Alentejo, Forte da Graça appears like a star fallen to earth. This 18th century military marvel was designed as the perfect fortress. Star-shaped walls that could repel any attack, underground barracks that could shelter thousands. It never faced a major battle, unlike its famous cousin Almeida, another star fort that became legendary for withstanding Napoleon's siege. While Almeida gets the glory, Forte da Graça proves that sometimes the smartest strategy is being so perfectly designed that no one bothers to attack. Perched high in the windswept mountains of Faith, Casa do Penedo looks like a prehistoric time capsule, part Flintstones, part fairy tale. But this isn't ancient history. It was built in 1972 by a textile engineer as a secluded family retreat, sculpted directly into four enormous boulders already resting on the hillside. There's no electricity, yet it has a fireplace, a kitchen, and even a swimming pool outside. What started as a peaceful holiday hideaway has become an architectural legend and a symbol of how raw terrain can become home with just enough imagination. Hidden in Portugal's interior, the Paiva walkways span 8.7 kilometres of wooden boardwalks that cling to cliffs and trace the curves of one of the country's purest rivers. This stretch of wilderness is so untouched. Scientists say parts of it haven't changed since the Ice Age, and yet here we are, walking straight through it. But Portugal's greatest engineering isn't in bridges or aqueducts. It's in how this country has preserved ways of living that the modern world completely forgot. In the mountains of central Portugal, entire villages are built from schist, dark slate shaped by local hands for over 800 years. Piodo and Talisnal aren't museum pieces. They're living communities where residents still farm impossible terraces and repair slate roofs using techniques their ancestors taught them. Tourists call Aveiro the Venice of Portugal, but these canals have a working history. The colourful Molichero boats now carry tourists, but they were originally designed to harvest seaweed for fertiliser, an industry that died out decades ago. Today, families still navigate these waterways to reach homes cars can't access, living by tidal schedules unchanged for centuries. At nearby Costa Nova, these famous striped houses served as navigation beacons for fishermen returning through Atlantic fog. The candy cane patterns aren't decoration. They're a practical system that accidentally became Portugal's most photographed street. Azenhas do Mar clings to cliffs above natural tidal pools that locals have used as their private swimming holes for centuries. This isn't a resort that happened to be built near beautiful water. It's a fishing village that chose the most impossible location on Portugal's coast and made it work. Families here still harvest sea salt from pools their ancestors carved, still time their lives to Atlantic tides, and still prefer their cliff edge isolation to any mainland convenience. At Ferragudo, a terracotta coloured fortress perches between two beaches, watching over waters where children now build sandcastles. Built in 1640 to defend against pirates, this fort has witnessed Portugal transform from a defensive nation to one that welcomes the world. Local fishermen still moor their boats in the shadow of walls that once protected them from raiders. Évora is one of Portugal's most beautiful historic cities. Roman temples, Gothic cathedrals, buzzing university life. Which makes the Chapel of Bones even more jarring. 5,000 human skulls, arranged in decorative patterns. Built by Franciscan monks when cemeteries ran out of space, it serves as a stark reminder of mortality. Across the Tagus, Cristo Rey rises, not as a symbol of power, but of gratitude. Standing 110 metres tall, it watches over Lisbon and the sweeping red arc of the 25th of April Bridge. Portugal built it in 1959 as a solemn thank you for being spared the devastation of World War II. Its design echoes Rio's Christ the Redeemer, visited by Lisbon's cardinal years earlier, then reimagined here as a national prayer in stone. But perhaps the most satisfying discoveries are the stories hidden behind Portugal's most famous places, the deeper truths that transform postcard images into profound experiences. Nazaré draws crowds for its monster waves, some of the largest ever surfed. But what most people miss is this. These aren't just big waves. They're the same towering Atlantic swells that once loomed over Portuguese explorers 500 years ago. Formed by the underwater Nazaré Canyon, these waves regularly rewrite the record books, like the 86-foot beast surfed here in 2020. Now look at this wall of water, and imagine being a sailor in a wooden ship, no engine, no map, staring into the unknown. The truly wild part, they considered this the easy bit. Everyone knows Benajil Cave, but few know how it became famous. This golden dome was a local fishing secret until one photograph ended up as a Microsoft screensaver, accidentally exposing Portugal's hidden gem to millions worldwide. What started as a fisherman's private beach became a global phenomenon overnight. The Douro Valley photographs beautifully, terraced vineyards cascading down mountainsides like green staircases. But those peaceful river cruises have a secret. You're floating over what used to be a death trap. Until the 1980s, this river was a raging torrent that destroyed boats and killed people. Only the specially built Rabalo vessels, those traditional boats you see in old photos, could survive these deadly rapids. Portugal tamed this monster with massive dams and locks. What was once Europe's most dangerous waterway became a luxury cruise route. Those wine tours gliding peacefully downstream, they're floating over submerged chaos. The Azores don't look real. 9 volcanic islands adrift in the Atlantic where green crater lakes glow in set cidades. Clouds drift through calderas. And cliffs drop straight into the ocean at Nordeste. The ground steams. The hills rumble. The whole place feels alive. But here's what most miss. People here don't just live beside the volcanoes, they live with them. In Furnas, restaurants bury pots of cocido stew in volcanic soil at sunrise and let the earth do the cooking. Across the islands, that same heat powers homes, warms swimming pools, even helps dry clothes. No noise, no flames. Just quiet, volcanic energy running daily life beneath one of the wildest landscapes in Europe. And now you know the real story behind this incredible country. You've seen the beauty, but you've also heard the stories. Walk the paths of explorers. And discovered what 99% of visitors never do. But what if I told you there's another European country that didn't just hide its secrets? It made itself completely invisible for almost 50 years. Click on the screen now to see how Albania vanished and what it has become today.